Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gamer Heroes podcast. I am your host, Thomas. We've got Mike downstairs wrapping up some of his own stuff real quick, so he'll join us hopefully here later in the show. But we've got another guest on this episode. Welcome to the show, Cam.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We just met just recently. Mm-hmm. How did we do our GGKC thing, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think we officially met at the fight night, our very last.
Yeah, it was the last one at Tapcade.
Yeah, it's supposed to be fighting games, but for the last one, I wanted to do indie games. So
kind of whatever. Really.
Yeah, so we played some Nidhogg, we played some Smash. My cup of tea.
Yeah, it's
that
good
was
stuff.
Nice.
I was into it.
Yeah, and had a bunch of people come out, so that was nice. And you know, at that same place, there used to be an Indiecade Monday. But the guy who was running it had other stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
He's a busy, busy dude. So when that quit happening, I wanted to make my own thing. So hopefully my own thing takes off here soon, because I had a bunch of fun last week at the first Strictly Casual.
Nice little plug there.
even though we have a lot of listeners who are not from Kansas City. So for them, they're just like, quit talking about this. This is uninteresting. So I'm excited for that. But last week we talked a whole bunch about the Nintendo Switch and holiday gaming and stuff, and how I played a ton of Into the Breach over Christmas. So then at Strictly Casual last week, I showed you Into the Breach. How'd you like it?
A lot more than I thought I would. I was kind of expecting to just kind of go around that event, just like meet people, hang out, play some cool games, play a bunch of different games instead of you just like handing me that controller and then me just sitting with it for the rest of the night, just staring at a TV screen.
Well, that was fun because, you know, I've only played it by myself. And I know a lot of people I listen to online have played that game like crazy. But I have generally avoided it. Not really intentionally, or I've avoided coverage of it. Not really intentionally, but, you know, if I'm not playing it and I'm not that into, like, giant mechs and stuff, you know, I don't need to listen to tens of hours of coverage for it.
Kind of same here. Like, I was coming from it more of, like, I didn't really give that game as much of the time of day as I really, now looking back, really should have. Because, like, it's a studio, like, their previous game was FTL. Played that a little bit, but it never really kind of grabbed me. But I also am really into giant mechs. That's like just one of the things I'm just really all about. But I'm kind of a little bit harder to sell to get me into like a strategy game.
Yeah. And that, you know, as we even discovered, it was fun playing it as a group.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Especially watching you and Jeremy play it because, you know, you're like, oh, okay, I think I want to do this. But then, you know, just like any puzzle, having a fresh set of eyes look at the same thing that you have, you both input what you've got, and you might take a little column A, a little column B.
Right.
The nice thing about that game is that there isn't just a right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
Everything is a little trade-off. Like maybe you picked the best case scenario, but you don't always know what the enemies are going to do the next round.
Yeah.
So you know, it leaves a lot of room for you to just play however you want, and you know, maybe there's no way that you can stop your buildings from taking a damage this turn. But there are smart ways to go about choosing how that's going to go down.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like the thing that just kind of really grabbed me the most about it is that it shows you literally everything. Like, it'll tell you, like, okay, well, you have this enemy right here, and they're going to be attacking this space, and they're going to be doing this much damage, and this is their turn order, and it's going to
show it even gives you the little video
exactly,
that shows exactly how the attacks were.
Right, yeah. It tells you way more. I don't want to say way more than it should, but because that's clearly how the game was designed, but I think that it really does a good job of kind of giving you absolutely everything you could ever want, and really the tough part of it comes down to your positioning, like knowing that you what your mech's particular skills and abilities are and how that like develops through your run.
Yeah, because they give you all the information, so it doesn't feel like they're holding your hand, but they're putting everything in front of you so that if you mess up, you're like, oh boy, it was right in front of me and
totally,
I just totally missed it. Which is kind of nice because it feels like there's a real give and take. There are actual consequences for your actions.
Yeah.
So it feels great when you succeed, and then when you do something just really foolish, you know, you feel something with that too. You don't feel like you were cheated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like anytime I do something, I feel like it was my fault, you know, like for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that it puts all the cards in my hand. There's a game, you know, Darkest Dungeon is a game I love. But there's a lot of stuff that is not in your control.
Yeah.
And the point of that game is, hey, bad stuff's going to happen. Deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And Into the Breach is the opposite. It says, here, everything is in your hands. It could go wrong, but it's up to you. Like, how are you going to do everything? Here is all the information. We're even going to tell you what's going to happen.
Yeah, I've absolutely never felt like Into the Breach has ever been unfair. I think punishing is like kind of a way you can describe it, but I think it's definitely punishing in a different way than Darkest Dungeon is.
Yeah,
I think it's there have absolutely been like entire islands where I've just completely breezed through and done absolutely everything correctly. And
right,
I'm feeling really great, got this like super souped up team, but then I make one like super fundamental mistake on the next island, and my run is just completely in jeopardy.
Right, I got too big headed playing. When I was messaging you the other night, I was like, oh, yeah, I might try hard next time. I'm going to try hard difficulty for the first time. And I got to the final mission, and I got to, like, the second stage of that mission. And I completely ruined my first turn, immediately burned one of my two resets because I have a pilot. So I was able to reset my whole turn. So, like, forgiven. And so then I played the turn out. Well, then when the second turn started, I realized, I just lost. Like, I definitely played that wrong, and I can't go back now. And I tried and tried, but no.
Yeah.
There was no way I was going to recover from that. So I ended up losing right at the end because I just got too big-headed. Like, I just wanted to do something cool when I should have just been smarter and slower.
Yeah.
But that's what I get.
Yeah, you know, I totally have absolutely done the same thing. There's I was on a really, really just kind of too good to be true run the other night with we were getting ready for a bunch of our friends were going out, and I was just sitting playing on the TV, and somebody who had played the game previously sat down and was just like doing the same thing that I was doing with Jeremy the other night. We were just like sitting down, just like talking through the turns, figuring out what was the best possible move. And it came down to basically I had to bank on the fact that my grid defense was going to be high enough survive that building getting hit. Because it was that or lose two out of three of my mechs, and those pilots had really good abilities, so I just like, well, I just
gotta
go for it. And it ended up working out great. But
really?
Yeah, for some reason.
Wow.
Like, I felt
I mean, that's like a 20% chance.
Yeah, well, part of it being an absolutely incredible run was that percentage was up to like 35 or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I told you that the first time I really did well. Once you do well at the beginning, like, if you do really well at the beginning, your chances exponentially increase on success for the rest of the run, which is how you get big headed and then do something like stupid like I did.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, if you do really poorly at the beginning of a run, you know, you can pick one pilot with all their leveled up bonuses to go back in time, right? And restart the game. And all your mechs, you know, you don't have your weapons, you don't have all your upgrades, but you do have at least one pilot that's all souped up and has, you know, extra bonuses to whatever. So that said, if you restarted the game five times in a row without even doing anything, nothing really changes because you've still got that one pilot just like you would have, even if you just won the last, you know, game, I guess. But what it means is, like, when I got my ass kicked, when I tried out the first set of mechs that I unlocked. I was like, I don't know how this works, but here goes nothing. And I lost. I literally lost the whole game on the very first round. It was the one where you can pull an enemy, but that's that mech's only ability at the start. He can use a shield.
Yeah, the shield is a shield. Okay.
Well,
that's like the
I could not have messed it up anymore. And I couldn't believe I was like, oh, I think I'm getting pretty good at this game. And I could not have lost any more embarrassingly. But when I was able, when I just reset it again, you know, there's no big punishment other than I lost that game. Now I'm going to start over. So, like, as soon as I knew stuff, like, as soon as you know stuff is going south, you can just get a clean slate.
Yeah.
And every level feels like fun, whether it's the very first level of a new game or the final boss. Mm-hmm. So that stuff's great because the grind is so nice. It's not about, like, even when you win, like, you do the best you possibly can do. You complete challenges to unlock the currency to buy a new mech set.
Right, yeah.
Other than that, it's still pretty lenient. Like, mm-hmm. clearly the point of the game is just to have fun with the grind of it.
Yeah.
It's not like, like, even if you win big, well, there aren't that many permanent bonuses or yeah, rewards or anything.
It's like a completely different grind from what I'm used to. Because, like, I've spent a lot of time playing a lot of, like, run-based games. Like, I put maybe last year alone, like, 100-plus hours into Enter the Gungeon again. Because yeah. I just hate myself, I guess. But between that and, like, The Binding of Isaac, those games are, like, mm-hmm. really super formative to me. Like, Risk of Rain's another one. But, like,
I've played a lot of Spelunky.
Yeah.
And still haven't beaten it. Mm-hmm. I booted up the other day, actually, and I spawned into the last area, so I didn't properly get there. I don't mm-hmm. know if you've played Spelunky.
Yeah, yeah.
So I finally actually got to Olmec. I got to the boss. I've never gotten to him mm-hmm. before. But also, I just get murdered every time I go to that last, the ruins, the Aztec-looking yeah, pyramid yeah. place. I just get destroyed because there's a lot of stuff there that kills you in one hit no matter how much health you have. And also, I'm bad at that area. So, you know, I get wrecked. But anyway, I've spent so many hours in that game. And same story, there aren't, like, persistent effects.
Yeah, yeah.
But, oh my gosh, I just have so much fun. And
it's just that
everything's new.
It's just that thrill of just like, well, I can probably get it the next time, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm really feeling like that a lot with Into the Breach. Like, I started playing it, that was, what, Wednesday of last week. And I think last night was the first night that I was not up until, like, maybe 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning, just being like, well, let me just see how this next turn plays out, mm-hmm. and then suddenly it's 3 in the morning, and then I just hate myself at work the next day.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm really glad I picked that up over vacation, because
yeah.
I had trouble setting it down, and I'm glad I was able to kind of get my fix
yeah.
while I had the time for it.
Yeah, thanks for that.
But, yeah, but. yeah, 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 yeah. I love that I can... And this is actually with a lot of Switch games. Mm-hmm. Well, with all the Switch games I have. you can just set it down and
yeah.
come back and pick up precisely where you left off, regardless of save state and stuff. Like Katamari Damacy is a game that doesn't have autosaves.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's a particularly persistent game. But even if I'm in the middle of a 10-minute round where I'm rolling around picking stuff up, I can just hit the pause button. You know, hit the power button to put it in rest and then leave it
yeah.
and come back tomorrow. And it's exactly the moment I left off. I don't have to worry about a save file
right.
or anything. So that's pretty nice, especially with the Switch's battery life. But even regardless of that, like the bite-sized nature of each of the levels, of each of the rounds in Into the Breach feels really good because like I'm realizing more as every month goes by even. Like... We've talked about in here how, like, MMOs. Like, I know Josh Welch is still playing WoW. And one of my friends, he and his wife are doing the free trial and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're having a good time. But I think the ship has sailed for me on MMOs. Just, like, it's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
I had so much fun. I would argue that some of the most fun I've ever had gaming was on MMOs, on World of Warcraft specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But they require so much time.
They do, yeah.
And even watching, we had our crazy snowstorm this past weekend, and all my girlfriend and I's plans all fell through because, of course, no, you know, it snowed
right. Nobody's going to
the
do
entire
anything.
Day.
Yeah, it's just absolutely nuts.
Right. So we stayed inside, and I watched her play Skyrim while I played Into the Breach mm-hmm. and Stardew Valley and stuff. And I like watching her play that because I can half pay attention. But still enjoy it, and I can be like, "Oh, hey, mm-hmm. you should go over here. There's something over here, but I'm not going to tell you. But it's cool."
Yeah.
So I can kind of enjoy that vicariously, but I don't really want to play because an open world game just has so much. And for as long as she played, she didn't really do well. She only did like one of the things she intended to, which is kind of the fun of those games to just wander and
totally.
Lose yourself in them. But I'm finding myself more and more interested in the really bite-sized games. Pick them up, set them down, and they're, you know, like, I'm not punished for, like, I'm not going to forget what was happening in my run.
Yeah.
you know, like in Into the Breach, if I forget even what mechs I was playing, that's okay because I can see literally yeah. all the information I could ever want.
The L button, man, just it's I wonderful. Just basically hold it down the entire time I play.
Right.
Just tells you literally everything you
it's
ever want to know.
Info. About what? Everything.
Just whatever, you know.
Yeah, so I love that. I love being able to spend exactly as much time as I want playing, set it down, and then come back with no rush.
Yeah.
Or anything.
And that's something I really like about just kind of their approach to the Switch, especially with like a lot of like Nintendo's like first party stuff lately. I'm watching my girlfriend play a lot of Super Mario Odyssey right now, or she also spent a lot of time playing Breath of the Wild a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really smartly designed, both with like the shrines and just like how those power moons are placed, where you can just like, oh, I got like, you know, 20 minutes, just gonna like pull out my Switch. Oh, I just finished this shrine, or I just like, oh, I found this cool thing. And it's really cool for that just kind of bite-sized experience, and it's really neat to see them kind of have that approach from kind of the top down. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of those indies also lend themselves really well to that. Like, it's honestly kind of a huge bummer that Spelunky isn't on Switch, because I would probably play a lot more of that.
Is Spelunky 2 slated to come out on Switch?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't think I've heard, but I don't think I was looking for it.
Check real quick.
Well, I can definitely say that. I can't wait. I need to buy an SD card because everything I bought is digital for the Switch, and I have no space because I did not research that at all. I had no idea this would so immediately be a problem, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited for that to be my indie machine. I've got pretty much the only games I have on there right now, I think, are Pokemon Let's Go that my girlfriend's playing. There's Smash, which I'm just barely – honestly, I've barely even touched it.
Yeah.
And Into the Breach and Katamari Rerolled. I think and Shovel Knight. But that's it. I got a bunch of other indies on the backlog though. There's one called GRIS?
Greece?
Yeah.
That looks gorgeous.
It looks beautiful, but I have no idea what it is, but I'm probably gonna love it.
Yeah, totally.
It's highly rated and it's an indie game, so I'll probably like it. but I've got that. I've got White Knight, which I technically bought on PS4, but I haven't booted it up. It's like a spooky black and white noir horror game. Well, it seems spooky. I don't know if I'd call it horror, but I haven't played it.
Okay.
Yeah. But the trailer looks great. But just a bunch of other games like that, whether I've bought them already on PS4 or not. I mean, I pretty much only buy stuff that's on sale, mostly.
Same here, really. I think the last game I bought for $60 or like retail price was, I'm not really counting Into the Breach because it's like $15, but I think it might have been like maybe God of War off the top of my head. Actually, it was Smash Bros. I lied. Smash Bros. Came out. I bought that.
Yeah, I pay $15 for a game and just play it for tens and tens and tens of hours. But then I pay full price for Smash and I hardly touch it.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is why I don't buy AAA games. Like, it could be fantastic, but I don't know if it's worth four times the price of this game I already love. You know, and like it feels great. Like, I don't think I like indie games because they're cheap. I like them and also they're cheap.
Yeah.
So it's just nice liking something that's extra affordable. Because even when I do buy a full priced $15 game or $20 game, you know, when Gang Beasts came out, it was $15 and I'm just, and even Duck Game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, hell yeah, these are worth way more than $15. Like, the amount of time and enjoyment you can get out of it, especially with a group of friends, where really it's more about who you're playing with than what you're playing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's such a steal. So combine that with the portability of the Switch, man, I'm excited. Not excited though to pay $70 a pop for extra controllers.
Yeah, that's a little much.
Oh, that's still.
I love my Pro controllers dearly, but they're
$70.
That's so much money.
That's so much money.
Good controller, but man, like I also get that. That's also kind of around the same price point as like your Xbox One or your PlayStation 4 controllers. But
yeah, but man, that's rough.
Yeah, I think I can understand $70 for the Pro controller a little more than I can for $70 for the Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know.
I don't know. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Who else are you going to buy from?
You got to play it somehow.
Yeah. Well, cool. You know what? Let's take a little break and let's see if we can get Mike in here.
Sounds good.
All right. Are you with the Force?
Is the Force with you?
Well, The Force is with us over at the Echo Station Podcast, a new Star Wars series from the Heroes Podcast Network.
Join us in a galaxy not so far away every other Monday as we discuss everything Star Wars from the original films through the whole EU.
So pour yourself some blue milk and get cozy in that tauntaun with the Echo Station Podcast. Find out more at heroespodcast.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We got Mike back here in the room now.
Hi, guys.
And, you know, if you want to ask any questions about Into the Breach, we could still talk about
it. We could do that. Would we be willing to just make that sacrifice for
you? I would. I don't know what questions to ask. I watched John play it a little bit. I haven't had a chance to play it yet. Looked super fun. Just like what you were talking about a little bit when we were downstairs. It's definitely, like John mentioned, it's definitely a time waster. Like, he was like, yeah, I'd start playing it. You know, I'd go through a few moves, a few games, and then be like, oh my god, I've been playing this for 6 hours.
Yeah. Right.
That's my entire past week.
I played it. Problem. Yesterday was Sunday snow day. We just chilled at my buddy's place. And I think he played a few games of Overwatch, maybe. And I was on the same level of Into the Breach. And he played like 3 or 4 games. Well, they were just a quick play games or arcade games, which are even faster. Mm-hmm. But he played like 4 games. Because I was telling him something that was happening in my round of Into the Breach, and then I was like, oh shit, I'm finally on the last turn. And he was like, are you on the same level? He's like, how many turns are there? I was like, 4. And I was like, this game's crazy. But yeah, I mean, definitely time slips away from you on that one. It's like, just indies do that to me, where like, oh, Minecraft. Well, Minecraft was an indie. I don't know what you call it these days. Yeah. But, you know, you get that music going, kind of matches. Like in Minecraft, it's real chill, where you're just like, oh, I could lay in a hammock right now. Where Into the Breach, you're like, oh, okay, we're kind of down to business. Yeah. But it's not really stressful, but definitely this is focused music.
It's like one turn away from being stressful, though.
Yes, you're always one turn away from being stressful.
Shit goes south in that game immediately in a way that I have kind of never seen anything like it before.
Yeah.
And you just kind of stare at a screen for like 35 minutes, and then you're just like, oh, I know how to deal with this. And then you do it, and then you still fucking die.
Yeah, you launch something. You know, the game's all about damaging enemies and moving them around. Mm-hmm. There's more to it than that, but that's pretty much what it is.
Right.
And when I'll be like, oh, ha-ha! Like, I've already used my turn reset thing, so there's, you know, not a lot of forgiveness anymore. But I'll be like, oh, easy peasy. I'm just going to, oh, no! You know, and I'll like, knock one of my own mechs into one of my own buildings so they both take damage. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, what have I done? Why did I not look at that? You know, because it's like a game of chess, except it's also against yourself. Mm-hmm. Because it's really just like...
It's a really good way of putting that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's you versus the computer, but you always know what the computer's going to do next. So it's really just like, how far ahead can you plan?
Yeah, I remember when I was watching John play it, and, you know, one of the first things that you see or that you get told about is like the number of turns. And you're like, wait, that's it?
Right.
Those are all the turns? Mm-hmm. And then you actually like... start to watch them play it, and you're like, oh, I see.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want any more turns.
Like, you've got enemies will spawn in, but you can see where they'll spawn.
Yeah.
And if you put something on top of that square, that thing you put on top will take 1 damage, and it will postpone that thing coming up for 1 turn, right? So you could do it indefinitely, but you're going to take a bunch of damage. Mm. The best thing you can do is knock enemies onto those squares.
Yeah.
But you want to be careful, because if you block all of the squares at once, even if you block them with enemies' bodies, they're all still going to show up next turn. So what can be successful is letting like 1 or 2, like if there are 3 that are coming up, maybe let 1 of them, maybe even 2 of them out. But definitely don't block all of them, because the next turn there might be even more that'll come out.
I've fallen into that trap before.
And once they come out, you can't put them back in.
I think the one thing that there's no multiplayer, right? It's just single
Correct.
Player.
No, yeah.
I thought it might be kind of cool if they, it'd probably be hard to balance, mm-hmm. but if they let like one person play the humans and the other person play like the aliens.
Or if they, I can imagine they, one of the islands has robots that just attack everything. So the bonus objective on one of these maps will be like, protect the robot factories. But also the robot factories are spitting out berserking robots.
Yeah.
And some of the robots aren't that big of a deal, but some of them are crazy. And, I mean, they will destroy everything if you, like, they pretty much always die in one hit.
Yeah, but which is, like, the only saving grace about that.
Yeah, but if you can't do one damage to them, they will ruin your day.
Yeah, some of them can do, like, three or sometimes if they can even, like, up to, like, four tiles that just deal damage to something, which can just completely wreck your entire run.
Right.
And it's, like, if you just go, like, sequentially, like I have been for some reason through the islands, that's the third one, and it... Basically, it's like, okay, well, I've been playing this run for, 2.5 hours, and,
and
whoops,
gone.
It's gone. Great. Cool. All
right. Right. But the fact that we keep coming back for more, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Yeah. That's...
But yeah, yeah, I mean, it's just such a good grind.
It's cool you get to save, like, the pilots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You get to pick one person. I was saying it's nice that because you can take one person back and only one person every single time, if you win or lose and you take one pilot back in time and you do what I did and immediately lose the game, like immediately, very first level, lose the whole game because I was trying out a new mech set, I was able to hit reset and really there weren't any penalties because I had basically the same exact things I had when I just started this failure of a run. But I knew I messed up so I can immediately just be like, okay, do over.
I also really like how they just kind of makes sense, like, plot-wise, how just, like, the concept of, like, a run-based game works. Because, like, it's all about, like, cool, you have, like, you start up the game, and the very first thing you see on the title screen, the first time you launch the game, is like, hey, this war's over, we lost. And then it's just like, all right, cool, send me back. And then it's just your pilot getting sent back in time to, like, start a, quote, new run. And they, like, all the pilots, like, little, like, dialogue and everything in between, like, during the fights and all that stuff is, like, all talking about, like, this timeline or something. And then occasionally you'll see, like, some little extra reward you can get is, like, an extra, like, little escape capsule that's coming through a different timeline that's going into your timeline that you have to rescue that could have, like, a pilot.
Oh, or,
like,
and they're so good. They're so good. Every time you see one, if an enemy shoots it or steps on it, it'll be destroyed. And so a lot of times it'll turn out, like, that thing that fell out of the sky, and you never know when it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like if it happens during a round, it'll happen at the very beginning. But when you pick the map, because you can pick which map you want to go on, and if you see one that looks like bad news, you can skip it, which is great.
Yeah, because they're completely optional objectives, which is really, really nice.
Yeah, and for the most part, you can choose which order you go in. So if there's an extra hard one that has extra rewards, which are often very worthwhile rewards, you might save that one till the end when. You might get lucky and get a capsule that has some stuff in it to upgrade your mech so that when you show up to that one, you're prepared for it. And as a reward for doing that, you get another mech upgrade. So that stuff's good. It's that game really is like plan ahead. And once you start doing well, you're going to do very well. If you start doing badly, boy, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Because everything snowballs.
I've started messing around with, like, I know this is basically just all turning into the Breach talk, but I started messing around. Once you unlock different, like, squads of mechs, because you unlock them, like, squads of three at a time, there's an option down at the bottom. It's just like, hey, just give me a random set from whatever you have unlocked, and I've just been kind of messing around with that.
Oh, I only saw that, like, yesterday.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that was
super
even
fun and also incredibly punishing. Like, sometimes you'll get, like, three that just don't do damage, and that you just have to, like, push them around and
geez.
Stuff. Yeah, it's awful. But, like,
do you get, like, bonuses or something for doing
there's
that?
There's, like, so, like, on each, you know how on each squad there's the,
so like, the prime one, the, like, brute, and the science?
Yeah, but sometimes you can get three primes, you can get three brutes, you can get three science, which is hard. But you know how there's each, like, different, like, medals you can unlock, or, like, do this with this squad to get, like, a coin to unlock another one? There's one set just for that. Just for, like, that random squad one. And it's just super cool to, like, just pick a random one and then just, like, rack your brain to just try to make it work. It adds so much more time to your runs, but it's super satisfying once you, like, pull something off. I had a run that was just an absolute complete nosedive that I survived just because my defense grid percentage was high enough on my last hit in one thing, and then eventually went around to actually just swing back around and win the whole thing, which was super cool.
That's good.
It's reassuring that the FTL guys came out with another great game.
Totally.
The game's great, and they had Ben Prunty, the composer, on again. And while I think the FTL soundtrack is a better soundtrack, this one, like, so FTL, I haven't even played the game, but I listen fairly regularly to a bunch of the tracks on it. this one is great for the game, but I'm not in a big hurry to listen to it outside of the game. Because they don't have any, like, hooks that I've really noticed while I'm playing. But they really match. Like I said, the game isn't really stressful. Like, you're always one turn away from being stressed out.
Right.
Which keeps you on your toes, but it's not a stress. I don't find it a stressful game. I think the music matches that because it's this kind of focused. If I had homework to do, that's what I would put on. 100%. I just put it on shuffle and repeat. And so it's great for the game, but I'm not going to listen to it outside of the game. But there are a lot of different ways that a soundtrack can be good. Like the Halo or Fez soundtracks are great for the game, and I'll listen to them all day, every day. You know, when I'm driving around and stuff.
There's probably something to be said, too, about the music not being too distracting, especially in a game where you're supposed to be just hyper-focused into what you're doing.
And if it's a game where, like, let's imagine you have themes for the different areas you go to. If the whole point of this game is, let's reset. Let's go back in time and let's do it all from, take it all from the top. If you had to listen to the same themes over and over, that would suck. It might be a good the first 10 times, but after that you'd be like, oh, okay, I'm turning the music down. You know, so I think that was probably a totally intentional choice to put it a little in the background.
Yeah.
Like, don't focus on it so much.
It totally does a lot of credit to that composer's work that I honestly don't even really notice it that much, you know? Because I do think that's by design.
Yeah. So I'm happy about that. I mean, we've spent like 30 minutes now talking about that game, plus last week's episode. I am very happy with that game. Like,
it's really good.
To be honest, that right now seems like almost like a gold indie standard of, like, I think it's a great place to start if you've never played an indie game. It looks like a tactics game, which is a specific type of game that I do not enjoy. But it doesn't have the pitfalls that I find in that genre, because it's more like a puzzle game than a fighting combat game.
I
think it just does a lot of things right. You know, the indies have been on the rise for a long time. I mean, for like 10 solid years now, they've been around, they've been getting better, and they've been taken more seriously. And you know, the Nintendo Switch, not that this came out just for the Nintendo Switch,
right,
but I think part of the success of the Nintendo Switch lends itself to the culture we have now of not necessarily even portability, but, like, maybe I don't want to, like, you can play Skyrim on it, but it's like, maybe I don't want to just play all these big games on here. There are big games like Super Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild and stuff, but we now have quality games that we can take on the go that don't feel cheap. They aren't microtransaction-y, or, you know, it's not Farmville and Candy Crush. They're real games, but they're little bite-sized ones. They're all pixelated, and they've got that art style and stuff.
I always tell people that the Switch is just what I really wanted with my Vita. And it's just fully realized and supported, and it makes me so happy.
Yeah, I'm really happy that that can do so well right now. But RIP Vita.
Yeah. I still have mine. It's not doing anything, but it's still there. So.
Yeah. Maybe that'll become like the future modded, like the...
Hopefully. That'd be nice. That's why the PSP stuck around so long, so...
Yeah. So, we'll see. But I tell you what, let's move on from into the breach. Save some of our listeners if they're still around. We got a couple things we could talk about. We've got... the CES 2019 CES is Consumer Electronics Show.
I
think it's just show. Which is basically, like I said before, it's Sharper Image, the conference. And then we've got the split of Bungie and Activision. So let's talk about Bungie and Activision. Bungie and Activision worked together for a long time now. So Bungie is the developer. Activision is the publisher. Activision is obviously huge. They're a whale of a company. Yeah. And they care about numbers, because when you're that big of a business, you care about the bottom line. The issue is that Bungie and Activision have had tension in their relationship since day zero. Like, before Destiny 1 came out, Bungie and Activision had conflicts of interest where Bungie was like, hey, we want to make this game, but here's why we want to make it. Activision said, well, we're funding you. Here's how you're going to make it.
Make us money.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they basically laid out what they needed from Bungie. And what they needed from Bungie was a once a year and pretty much only once a year expansion. Like, you're going to have new content about fall. I think it's around fall every year.
I think so.
I could be wrong.
Maybe
about
like
that.
Late summer.
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like The Taken King came out like summer.
Yeah, Forsaken wasn't that long ago for Destiny 2.
Yeah.
That might be right.
So, Bungie wanted to make more content, and it's been tough telling what each side actually wants because they can only say so much because they're not trying to hamstring themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It now seems, now that they've split, Bungie has basically said that they look forward to releasing content on a more seasonal basis, which seems great because if Bungie has been limited by Activision's schedule.
Mm.
And by all accounts, it seems like Forsaken, like the way Destiny 2 is right now, seems to be the best that it's ever been.
Yeah.
Like, when I hear people give proper critical reviews of it, it sounds like the quality of life in that game is great. There are some issues that just Destiny has, but as far as the overall arc, you know, the bell curve of Destiny, seems like we're at the top right now. The issue is Activision has been complaining that there aren't enough players. They just can't hook people. And we could attribute that to a lot of stuff, not the least of which are like PR blunders of like microtransaction-y stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, limiting matchmaking in the first game. Like, you could not matchmake for a raid, period.
Hmm.
If you wanted to, you had to either go to the forums or use a third party.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, which is bonkers. Yeah, that was bonkers.
Yeah.
So apparently they have all that stuff now. The guys on Giant Bomb described it as like they took all the problems from Destiny 1 but overcorrected. Mm-hmm. So they fixed all the problems, but then they went too far and they created their own new problems. And so this is an example of the quality of the game not representing, or the success of the game not representing the quality of the game. Because Bungie's had good like community outreach, they have very active like mods on their forums, and they're pretty transparent. Even back when there were a couple of people on Destiny 1's team that ended up leaving the team over creative differences because they basically weren't able to make the game that they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Activision had a big part to play in that.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of reports of, like, looking at the Kotaku article on it that Jason Schreier put out, and he was talking about, like, hey, these people were just, like, straight up cheering whenever they, like, made that big, like, all-hands announcement. They're just like, yeah, we're not with Activision anymore. Awesome.
They said they were literally popping champagne bottles.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
But like, so everybody, it seems like there was, you know, it's no mystery where people wanted to go with that.
Right.
So that seems like great news.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what they do with that, because I played just an absolute ton of Destiny 2 whenever it launched on a PS4. I didn't, like, pre-order it or anything, but all of my friends did, and I just got swept up in that, just like, oh, well, everybody else is doing it, I should too. Mm-hmm. So then I just bought it, and I just absolutely played the crap out of it. And then I moved to a place with no internet for 2 months.
No.
And then during that time was whenever everybody was just like, oh, this isn't actually that good. And then I was like, well, all right. So then I just like didn't really hop back in.
Right.
And then by the time that I like, well, by the time like Forsaken came out, I'm just like, I just got too many other things to play right now, you know. But
It's not you.
Yeah,
it's me.
It's totally me. But
and Bungie's like, no, it's you.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, Activision was like, no, it's you, pointing to the consumer, and Bungie was pointing to Activision like, no, it's you.
Yeah, it's just like, well, you know it's $60 to quit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've wanted to get back into it, especially with all of the like the news and like the announcements about like how good Forsaken actually is, but it's just a lot of money for me to want to get back into that, because it's like, it's at this point, it's like another $60. They just rolled out the annual pass thing, which is really good if I think I kept up with that over time and had like vested interest in it. But it's hard for
me
to
want
to come back in.
I wish I had somebody that I knew personally who played, that whose opinion I valued,
mm-hmm.
who I could ask this stuff. because I keep hearing all this good stuff from people whose opinion I care about online, journalists and the like. Mm. But I want to talk to a friend who plays.
Right.
Because, you know, Destiny was free on PlayStation Plus November, October, somewhere around there.
And then they gave it around BlizzCon too.
Well, they did that, and they had Forsaken way on sale. And I'm looking at this, and I'm like, I hear the game's great. You're almost giving it to me. But I still don't even know if I want to play. Like, I just don't know if I have time. I don't know if I'm willing to commit to it. I don't know if I'm really... Like, I have plenty of stuff I know I like, and I know I will like. I don't know if I'm in a big hurry to swallow something this gigantic, you know?
Well, and when you play a game, you foot out the cash for this expensive game, and then not even a month later, they're like, oh, yeah, here's the $60 expansion pack we're coming out with in, like, 6 months or something. You just start to feel like you're getting used, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, like, you're telling me that you're already about ready to release this expansion. Like, half of this stuff had to have been completed by the time you actually released the game. You know, like, I don't know. It makes me feel bad as a consumer. So it makes me wary to, like, I don't know, get back into it.
Well, I wonder how much of that stuff was Activision, because they said, you know, they have to release an expansion every month.
Woo!
Man. All right. It's crunch time all the time.
I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah. They said that you have to come out with an expansion 1 year, every year, no more, no less. You cannot come out with more or less than that, which is not a lot of creative freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, as someone who's like, oh, my passion is video games. I can't wait to do this. Imagine that and this is all speculation. Imagine you're the developer and you did already make that expansion content. And people online are like, oh, man, I bet it's already finished. And you're sitting there like, shit. Like, yeah, it is. And I wish I could release it, but I can't because it doesn't match the schedule of our publisher.
Right.
You know, and that stuff kind of sucks, where it's like, when you get such a big publisher like that, it can be amazing or it can be awful for the exact same reasons. Because, in some cases, you have a publisher that will just fund you big time. So, like, it seems like what Microsoft is doing, buying up all these studios, whether it's like Ninja Theory, who made
Hellblade.
They did. Is that the one? It's like Senua's Sacrifice. Yeah. So that game was like, I didn't actually play it, but beautiful and told a great story and all this stuff, but very expensive because it was highly graphically intensive and had to pay all these actors and motion capture and all this stuff. It's a big process. Well, it seems like Microsoft is saying, hey, here's a budget. You guys clearly have something good going for you. We're going to leave creative control in your hands. Here's a blank check, more or less. That's great. That's exactly what you want to happen if you are a game studio.
Yeah, I think that's super smart. I think Sony's been doing a lot of that lately too, which is really good. Like, the fact that Dreams isn't out but is still coming out, but it was like announced when they announced the PS4, and we've like really not really heard a whole lot about it until very recently. The Media Molecule game, the Little Big Planet guys.
Is that the one where you can like make your own?
Like, it's basically like a game where you can make games, I guess.
A friend showed me that. I just assumed that thing came out and it flopped because that came out. I mean, the trailer he showed me was like,
yeah, they announced that in like 2013, and the beta, I think, either happened recently or is going to happen soon. But,
well, I hope that becomes as cool as the trailer looks.
Yeah, totally.
Because you just, what was that game that when the Kinect was still called like Project Natal and stuff? They had that game where it was essentially that Media Molecule thing, except it was on Xbox, where it was you can make your own
Project Spark, I think it was.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And that was another one.
A little bit. Or wait, did that come out?
I think it came out.
It came out, but then they pulled it like pretty soon after.
Yeah.
I think I played it a little bit.
Yeah. That stuff is so cool, and the ideas are so big that I wish they would come out. You know, I wish that we could see them. I wish those were the projects that Sony was sinking time into, not No Man's Sky.
It's really encouraging to see a big publisher like Sony, or now Microsoft, like just say like, hey, take your time with this. We trust you. We know what you're going to do is what you guys want to do. And that's how you get like good like art and good content out of this. But like, also, like, these other games are going to pay for it, so don't really worry about it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's going to be really tough for them to make their money back off of Dreams or something like The Last Guardian or something. I'm sure that didn't make any money, but or as much money as it could have.
Yeah, because that stuff gets tricky, because especially if it's very expensive to make, well, then when it comes out, that's how you get mandatory mm-hmm. microtransactions.
Yeah, you got to make up the money somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right, but then if you do that, it you pull an Activision.
Right.
Where I was like, oh, so this is what this is. Mm. And once you get that reputation, boy, it's hard to shake. Because I think a lot of the stuff they did in Destiny 1 was like, oh, hey, another expansion on the way, and it's another $60. And as far as I understand, I think they like got away from that in a sense where you weren't just constantly forking out a new game's worth of money to mm-hmm. continue playing the game. But does it matter? Because a lot of people still think that that's how it was. Like, they got that reputation, weren't very apologetic about it, and then you've got people who are like, yeah, I'm not going back to that. Why would I give them a second chance? I don't care about it that much. And that sucks. Like, that PR ruined that game.
Totally.
You know, it wasn't the quality of game that ruined it. It was marketing.
Yeah, I think the matchmaking had a lot to do with it, too, kind of like what you're talking about. Because it's like, if I'm paying $60, half of that is so that I can play this new raid that I'm never going to play. Because yeah. it's so yeah. hard to get a group together yeah. to just
Because if play. You don't have a squad,
yeah.
You know, how are you going to find people? I had to go through some shitty website. That it was like a forum that I was using on my phone, so it was extra incompatible.
Yeah.
And it's just bad news. It was terrible. And even if you went to the tower in the first game, like the hub world, it wasn't like an MMO where you're like, you know, where in WoW I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go to Orgrimmar. There are a million people in this city. Like, I can just find all sorts of people. And if nothing else, even that level 3 over there, he's probably got a main account he can switch to and run this dungeon with me. You know, in Destiny, you could fit 12 people into the server, like the isolated server where the instance was. So you had 12 people on the tower at one time, no more. And a lot of times, voice chat's not even enabled for those people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way for you to communicate. So you're in a world that's supposed to be populated by all these players, and sometimes it is, but you can't talk to each other.
Hey, at least you get to kick that soccer ball around.
You do get to kick the cool soccer ball. That's important.
That's the realness.
The true Destiny experience.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited for Bungie. I really hope that them being able to make their own... I hope they're able to make their own name for themselves again this late in the game. I really hope they're able to do something good with it. I would love for that game to be so enticing that I actually pick it up and play.
Same. I love the idea of Destiny so much, and I love all of the like little bits and pieces and like little just work on little things that they put into it. Just really sounds super appealing to me, and like playing it feels great because Bungie makes a good shooter.
They do. You know,
it's just a lot.
They've been so deep into Destiny these days, and their old IPs sold off. So it's easy to forget that Bungie made Halo.
Yeah.
One of my all-time favorite series.
Yeah, totally.
Like, and, you know, after 343 Industries took it over, I'm like, well, you know,
it's fine. All right.
Whatever. Also, I don't own an Xbox One, so that kind of doesn't
here.
Help, though. you know, Bungie is like a beloved company for me. They made this great product. They also had, like, some big snafus with Marty O'Donnell, the composer.
And, yeah.
So that was bad news, but that's another example of marketing ruining something for you before, you know,
right.
You're a game developer, but people aren't even looking at your game
mm-hmm.
because you messed this other thing up outside of, you know, the digital world.
I'm interested to see if Bungie, this is going to sound bad, but if, like, kind of learns from their mistake a little bit, because I felt like them getting out of this is really similar to whenever they're just like, all right, Microsoft, we're just kind of done with you, like, in that article I was mentioning earlier, like, he's just like, yeah, well, they were clapping whenever they weren't with Microsoft anymore either. So, like, are they going to... I'd hope they would just be a little more careful with how they approach any, like, future potential business partners, just because
right.
at some point, like, if this happens again, the problem is you, you know?
Like, right, right.
Like, the third time...
You keep finding these abusive relationships.
Right.
We want to help you, but please stop.
We want to support you, but you're just doing this to yourself. So,
yeah, so yeah. We'll see. I wish them well. I really hope everything goes well for them. The next step is, of course, getting Blizzard and Activision to split. but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. This is Greg from Red Shirts and Runabouts. We're the resident Star Trek podcast as part of the Heroes Podcast Network group. If you love Star Trek and things science fiction, we're definitely the show for you. Join us every Thursday as we talk about Star Trek Discovery, the new Picard show, and other ongoing content and new creations from the Star Trek universe. If you want to find us, search Red Shirts and Runabouts podcast on Apple and Google Play. And if you want to interact with us as a host, you can find us at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter.
All right. Well, let's wrap this sucker up. Let's talk about Sharper Image, the conference.
All right. Hit me with the infomercial.
Yeah. So CES is going on. CES is such a goofy thing. The reason most people haven't heard about it is because there's no reason to have heard about it. Because it's because it's such a goofy... It's mostly silly things where it's like, why would I ever need any of these things? Like, none of these things are practical in the slightest bit. But on the other hand, it's fascinating, especially now in a post-Black Mirror world, where it's like, ooh, like if you've seen Cabin in the Woods, you know, they go into the basement and they have all these things that they could touch. And depending on which one they pick...
Determines their fate.
And so I feel like that's what CES is like, if you just walk around the showroom floor, like, you could... Somebody needs to make this movie.
Yeah, I would watch the shit out of this movie.
Where, like, I saw one, it's like... It's this weird face massager that, like, trims your eyelashes by melting them off or something.
What?
Yeah. I thought that sounded weird until I saw it on multiple articles, and I was like, this is real! Like, this is a real thing? I think the thing I saw was that, and it kind of looks like a LeVar Burton visor, okay. A Cyclops visor.
I'm suddenly back in. So, yeah, I'm in now.
So I imagine you touch one of these artifacts, you know, like a Lovecraftian artifact where you touch this thing and you have a vision of like a dystopian future where, you know, each episode of this show that we're all going to make, it just shows you like how these eyeball visors, they went too far.
Cthulhu comes like rolling in on a hoverboard.
Yeah. Yo, this is sick. And he doesn't all.
But he like, just falls down.
It's new tech. You just haven't got used to it.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of goofy stuff. It just all sounds fake. I read two articles about just like the one that was all about the wackiest stuff and then one that was about the real stuff. The wacky article seems like someone made it up from whole cloth. Just like, let's insert a lot of like what a kid's version of a cool tech fair would be. But it's all real. Mm-hmm. And people really invested time and money and marketing into these products. And, you know, most of them never turn out to be anything, but they might be the first step towards something that actually is something.
Right.
Like these TVs that you can roll up.
Yeah. What? Mm-hmm. Like, I remember hearing about curved displays for the first time at CES one year. And I was like, what the fuck? You're going to break these screens. Right. And now that's like the thing to get.
Because they can be monstrous.
Yeah.
And you can stretch them. Well, gorgeous, not like stretch, too, but yeah. Like they're modular, so you can have it. I saw they were apparently showing off. So most of the stuff I've seen on CES, I've seen from CNET, which does a good job of having headlines that are useful, but a little attention grabby, but not misleading. Generally not misleading. I mean, it is a headline on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. They have all this stuff going on, and the impressive thing about this TV that has been all over the place lately is that it's this huge TV that I think like the number of inches in it was three digits. Like it was some massive behemoth of a TV. But the impressive thing about it was that they were able to shrink it down to a totally normal-sized big screen TV. And that was impressive because that meant that you could actually use it practically or move it and use it in just the most,
you know, just in case
obscene.
You need that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. As
well,
if you're
going
like,
camping this weekend.
Yeah, right. You know. Right. Like, oh, we have a party. We better rearrange the furniture. We're going to use this giant white wall.
It's okay. I brought my 10,000 watt generator.
Great. Right. Awesome. So that stuff's remarkable, but like, who's buying this stuff?
I don't even know, man.
And
I really think it's just like everybody in there is just like an undercover, like, person with the military who's like, what can we kill people with? Like,
right. How can we weaponize this tech? Yeah.
I like to think that my at least like running like internal conspiracy theory is that CES lately has just been like somebody just like they have a bet with somebody else to see, like, just how far can we take this?
Yeah.
Like, how far can we really... Do they really need something that'll fold your laundry? First of all, the answer is yes. But, like, do we really need something like that? And then they just keep getting further and further and further. Like, smart fridges? Those are a thing. Like, what?
Yeah. That's... Those can... I mean, that really is on the line of... Is this... is this practical enough to be useful? Which, maybe...
Hmm.
But has science gone too far?
Totally.
Like, is this far enough where I should start seeing red flags?
Yeah.
Like, do I need a fridge that tells me the score of the football game?
Right.
And the answer is probably yes.
Yeah, sure, great.
I just left the Chiefs game. Now I'm going to my fridge to grab another beer. If I don't see that score on there,
yep.
I'm taking it back.
There are some things where it's like, okay, it's great that you keep making this more and more perfect. But at some point, they forget that I am just flawed as a human being. Like, open my fridge and tell me that any smart fridge could sort out what the fuck's in there. Like,
yeah, yeah.
There are points where it's just impossible.
You have 9 mason jars.
Yeah.
You didn't mark any of them. We don't know what they are.
Yeah.
For the best.
It's like, I need a computer to do all of that for me.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, why am I even here?
We are doomed as a society.
We need the smart house from that Disney Channel movie.
Oh, yeah,
just absolutely. Where it just does everything.
Yeah.
Like,
everything's smart, and the house is smart, and Leela's running the show. Yeah. It's great.
Great.
Yeah, so that's wacky. One thing I did see was for the first time you can actually buy, not just know that it exists, but actually buy a 1 terabyte SD card. That is huge.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. As I said online, you can fit a lot of indie games on that bag.
Yeah. Imagine putting one of those in your Switch.
Dear Lord.
Man. Is that... That's the answer.
Yeah. Well, I've got like a 128 card on mine, and I feel like I'm just like nowhere near
swimming in space. Yeah. Even on the PlayStation Pro, the only thing... Once I deleted Skyrim, because I never play it, even though I still have my save file, so maybe I'll play it.
Yeah.
It was Red Dead, which was 92 gigs, which is obscene, but also in a 1 terabyte SD card world, maybe it's not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? An SD card is so small. To think that carries as much as my PlayStation, and just to think how much stuff that is, especially if I'm doing gaming, like... Of course, they design this for everything, not just gaming, so videos and all this stuff.
Right, yeah.
In case you want to record your entire life and then put it all on one digital dystopian thing. I don't know. I mean, that's just so much data, and that's wacky.
And well, and to think, like, not even 20 years ago, how big hard drives were.
Oh, like, yeah.
Think even when solid states came out and it was like, whoa, this thing boots up so fast, but also it only has like 50 gigs on it.
It's almost scary. Like the more efficient this stuff gets, like the quicker that ramps up in the production.
Totally,
and it's like, really, like robots taking over the world is not that far away. Like we are all going to die soon.
Yep. Just enjoy it while we can, I guess.
Dude, Mass Effect, if you guys played through Mass Effect...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Mass Effect is all one big love story to artificial intelligence. There's a ton of stuff going on in that game, but really what it comes down to is, man, artificial intelligence is nuts, right? And it addresses that in a ton of different ways. But like, man, my philosophy after all of the sci-fi that I've consumed is like, maybe the whole point of humanity, maybe the meaning of life is to create artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Because once we create that, it's going to be just fine. We might not be around forever.
Yeah.
And just like whatever happens to this planet, like probably the big life isn't going to last. The small life, all the tiniest organisms, they adapt really well. They're probably going to be fine. But artificial intelligence, once you create that, especially if you create something that can explore space,
mm-hmm.
like that's why the story of like Destiny has always been so cool to me. It's like, in Mass Effect, it's like, in Mass Effect, the Geth are like, oh man, stuff seems pretty bad. We just became sentient. You know what we don't need? Oxygen. yeah, we're out of here. And they just take off. Like, they aren't, it's not a Terminator situation where it's like, oh shit, we have to fight. Like, the organics, the Quarians in there. They're like, oh shit, we gotta kill all the robots. And the robots are like, yo, chill out. Like, hold on. Like, we just woke up. We just woke up. You know, so then I love that because instead of being like a, you know, tech versus everybody thing, the tech, the robots, the AI, they're just like, yeah, we're leaving because we can. Like, please don't follow us. Yeah, we're just gonna go. And I've always liked that idea because it's like, maybe we are just supposed to make artificial intelligence and just let it go do its thing. Like, maybe it doesn't try to kill us because it doesn't have to. It can just go explore space. Like, if we ever find alien, like, life or intelligence, it'll be robots. We'll be like, oh shit, somebody else already made robots. You know, but I think that stuff's so fascinating to think about. And when I see the CES bonkers dystopian tech stuff, it just makes me, like, I laugh at what tech means to different people. Because to some people, tech is great. To some people, tech is the problem. Or it finds its way somewhere in between. But it's just so interesting to see how our technology moves, how people embrace one thing that you think, you know, that they won't, or they hate something that you think that they would love. You know, and then you watch a movie like WALL-E, where they go up in the spaceship and everyone's fat and on these chairs that float around and every, you know, it's a paradise, but everyone's a piece of junk.
Yeah.
I love how CES, which is basically just like a big drone shooting Twizzlers at everybody, has taken us like two here in this conversation.
Yeah. What else did I see? Something actually cool that I saw that I was just skimming through. The Vive, or so HTC announced the Vive Pro I, E-Y-E, and also the Vive Cosmos, which has a dope name, but I still don't know anything about it because I didn't look that hard. but the I one, the whole shtick of it is if VR is all about where you're looking and this headset can track your eyeball to see where you're actually looking, what it can do is... it can generate high resolution where you're looking, but then reduce resolution everywhere else. So you still have great peripheral vision, but it can put all of its hardware resources into where the focus matters.
That's really cool.
Because you don't need HD off to the side because your eyes can't see it.
That is a really good idea.
So that's pretty cool because that's just, you know, VR is such a new technology, and with so many technologies, it's like, oh, we have this cool thing, but we can't figure out how to squeeze the juice out of it. You know, and this is an example of them being like, oh, well, we don't have to show everything all the time because it doesn't matter. Like, if you had the Vive on your head and you were looking around, it looked great to you, and I was watching on a computer screen, that might look bad for me, but you can specify certain experiences for certain things. Maybe this one is the most beautiful VR game, but it looks terrible if you have a spectator watching. But figure out, you know, what's designed for what. If you have a spectator one, well, then don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when it gets to that point, it's like, just have the spectator put the goggles on for a minute, you know?
Yeah. I would love to have... So the biggest barrier to VR is mostly money. Mm-hmm. It's prohibitively expensive.
Yes.
And then there's like, oh, you have to have space for it. Like, if you're going to have a Vive, you have to have like an 8x8 square to walk around and room to put these portable satellite towers to hang the cameras on or mount them to your walls. Those are big asks, especially like, imagine if you have a family of like four or like four kids. So a family of six, boy, you're never going to get a Vive,
right?
You know, maybe you get it and the kids immediately break it. You know, there are just a lot of barriers to it. And I cannot come quickly enough. I want all this stuff to become more commonplace, more accessible, because I want people to see it because it's cool. It's great.
Yeah.
But also the more people that see it and realize it's great, the more demand goes up and the more stuff will be created to meet that demand. But that's a big ass hill to climb.
Yeah. I'm always on the fence with VR, but the day that they release an affordable, I don't remember what you call them, but they're like the platforms that you stand in where they hold you and you can kind of run in place.
Yeah, yeah.
the day that I can afford one of those, I will buy one in a fucking millisecond. Yeah. That is like everything that I want right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I spent a little bit of time playing with a PlayStation VR because that's just kind of, I don't have one, but a friend of mine does. So that's just kind of my access thing, yeah. You know, it's like a friend with a boat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've really, really enjoyed like the time I spent with it. I thought it was just this really cool technology, and like everybody always says, like, you just don't really get it until you try it. And like, I was like, yeah. Whatever. But like, I put it on, like, holy shit.
Right.
Fucking rules.
Yeah.
And it's just like this really cool thing. And like a lot of developers right now are doing some really neat applications with it. And even like outside of games, like, you can buy like courtside tickets to NBA games and just like watch them with your VR headset. And like a lot of artists are actually putting like, hey, we have a VR camera in our concert, and you can just go watch the concert, even though it's sold, if it's like a sold out venue or something, which I think is super cool.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet. Man, I did not really think about that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty rad. A lot of, I think there's some use for people who are like, hey, if you like can't make it to like this like big class or this big lecture or seminar or whatever, then like we have this in VR as well, so you can like just kind of really be in that environment and everything. The applications are really cool, but yeah, like the barriers totally cost right now, but I do think that's going to go down over time, obviously. But and I know Oculus is pushing out their, like, I forget what it's called, but it's like the, like, just the standalone thing that you don't need a computer for.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have a VR setup, which I think is absolutely just totally what that needs.
Yeah,
man, that's making me think now of like the future of music. Like, imagine like you buy like, I don't know, MTV Pass or something, and it's just a bunch of artists that are coming out with like VR music videos.
Yeah,
and you just pop that on and just kind of zone out for a while.
You can already do that with like some stuff on YouTube.
Oh,
like,
really?
Any video that you can watch, or probably wrong about this, but like most or all videos in that you can watch with are like 360 videos of YouTube. Just throw on a VR headset and you're just like in the music video, and they're like shot and designed for that.
That's really cool. I did not know that existed.
It's really cool. It's a lot.
And then there's also Beat Saber, which you can just pull YouTube videos down. And well, what you do, somebody has to make it, but there are so many people, there are Discords out there where you'll be like, yo, can someone turn this YouTube video into Beat Saber? And someone be like, yeah, sure, just come back like in a couple days, I'll have it finished, just because they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will create like a custom, you know, Beat Saber is like lightsaber guitar hero with drums.
It's fucking awesome.
It's great.
It's so good.
So you can do that with any song. People, there's so many out there, and they're all just fan made.
Mm-hmm.
So since you don't have to pay someone to do it, they're all free. So they're all available all the time, which is amazing. And so you get to basically dance and do all this stuff, listen to all these songs. All you have to do is just ask somebody to make it if it's not already made.
Yeah. Only on the PC version, though, because PlayStation doesn't really fuck with mods that much. So.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really cool. And I spent a lot of time, like, my, quote, formative gaming years, a lot of them were spent playing, like, Guitar Hero and Rock Band and a bunch of those, like, Western-style rhythm games. And Beat Saber appeals to me just on a very just fundamental level, and it's an absolute blast.
I used to play a lot of a Beat Hazard.
Beat Hazard. Is awesome.
It's like, I don't remember what the style of game is called. We're just like in a spaceship. A
twin stick shooter, I think.
Yeah, you're just like flying around space shooting things that are coming in from all the sides of the screen.
Yeah,
twin
stick
shooter. And you can load in your music into it and play it. And your lasers and everything in the game like enhances as the music gets more intense.
Huh.
So like you can still pick up power-ups and everything, but if the music's really low, you're just like barely, you're like a pea shooter. Like you're barely shooting anything. Maybe there's just a few asteroids coming in or something. But then like as the music gets intense, that's when all the ships start coming in.
Yeah.
And then like if it's a really big part of the song, a boss will come in and stuff. It is just, oh my God, you can waste a lot of time.
Yeah, man,
like,
that sounds
there's like leaderboard setup design that are just like, it looks for like that particular like songs. I think they're just the metadata for it, and it'll like build a leaderboard for that song. So if like you had this song that you really like playing on, and then you can just compare yourself to like everybody else, which is super rad.
See some Dragon Force.
Oh, there's a lot of Dragon Force in Beat Hazard. That's what it is.
Man, that sounds fun.
It's
pretty cool.
What do you play that on?
I have it on Steam. Yeah.
It was like one of the first Steam games I bought in 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty old. I remember I played it, probably around 2010, I think. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty cheap now, I think.
Yeah, it goes on sale for like maybe less than $1 all the time. Yeah. So.
Man, really breaking the bank.
Totally.
Well, sweet. All right. Well, I guess we better get to work on that dystopian CES TV show.
Sounds good to me.
We're going to have to come up with a name for it, though.
I got nothing right now, so just give me like a week or something.
Yeah.
All right. We'll come back. Actually, you know what? We haven't had a question in a few weeks. All right, listeners, we're asking you, what should we name our CES version of Black Mirror? Best answer all announced next week. Actually, I'll probably announce all of them because I bet a bunch of them will be good.
I'm sure.
But send us some feedback. We are the Game of Heroes podcast. We're your hosts from GGKC. Mike, thanks for joining us. Cam, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And I suppose we'll see you guys next week.
Later. Gamer Heroes is part of the Heroes Podcast Network and hosted by GGKC. You can find our episodes at heroespodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and tons of other podcast apps. Follow us online at Gamer Heroes Pod and at GG_Kansas_City on Twitter or at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch. You can also find us on GGKC Facebook page and our website gg-kc.com. To all you gamers out there, play nice, play well, and play again. See you next week.